episode 54 of the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. Welcome back, everyone, to the Bowery Capital Startup Sales Podcast. Today, we have with us Ken Pouliot, VP of Sales at Gigya, and we're going to be talking about the proof of concept deal, bear trap or honeypot. How are you doing today, Ken?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on. Today, as I said, Ken is the VP of Sales at Gigya. Just joined there 3 or 4 months ago, I believe.
Yep.
Excellent. He has some great enterprise sales experience previously with Box, Symantec, VeriSign. Ken, for the audience, you want to just give a little bit more on your past roles?
Sure. So been in sales for a little over 25 years, from an individual contributor to obviously management and upper management. And I would say specifically probably over the last 10 to 15 years, been heavily involved in SaaS organizations.
Excellent. You know, I think also probably most listeners have heard of Gigya, but, you know, just in case not, you want to just give us a little idea of what you do and focus on there?
Sure. So Gigya, the main part of Gigya is how to make unknown customers known, right? So we deliver basically a RaaS solution, which is registration as a service. And the main goal there is using the 10 years that Gigya's been around to kind of be able to take people from social engagement and opt in to wanting to give their identities over to the organization, right? So yep. It's pretty compelling. Like I said, it's really helping the next wave of digitalization and really personalization that people want to try to achieve in their marketing world. And so what Gigya does is, like I said, it's a complete platform play that has data centers located around the world that allows you to basically uptick and find those unknown users, get them registered so that you can better solicit those unknown users that are on your website.
Got it. Okay. And today, you guys are how many folks and how many people on your team?
So roughly about 400 people. I've got around 8 people who are growing out on the East Coast looking to double. And then I would say in general, though, we have about 400 people in the different data centers in different places we have around the country. About $50 million in revenue right now.
Okay.
And growing.
Great. And it might also be helpful. So are there particular industries of focus, or I guess, how do you think about your kind of coverage as a sales leader?
So I think actually, you know, the interesting part is I think very typical for anything that would be more marketing related, right? Gigya went specifically after media and CPG. But what we're really finding out is that the common use case for everyone is understanding their customers and getting a better 360-degree view of their customer. And so whether you're the pharmaceutical company, which we were talking to recently, and talking about how to get better coverage and find those unknown doctors that they don't have their salespeople going to, all that circulates around identifying those users and being able to come up with good sales and marketing approaches to go after them. And so Gigya, through the use of, like, again, RaaS, allows people to do that in a much more cost-effective way.
Cool. And final question, just, you know, related to, to Gigya. An idea of ACVs and, you know, maybe just kind of the size of your average deal broadly, or is it to just totally vary?
Sure. Pretty simple. I think most of our, you know, what we've seen as Gigya has grown from more of a hub and spoke sales model to more of a field model is the ACV has drastically increased. So right now we're seeing about 153 to 258 is the average deal size. Again, we're probably seeing on an average anywhere between 90 days to around, I think, 156 days is the average sales cycle. So,
awesome. Well, before we dive into the meat of the content, what is one thing that no one listening to this podcast would know about you? Fun fact segment.
No one listening to this podcast probably doesn't know that I have a love affair for the Red Sox, I guess, and that I'm a proud parent of triplets. So,
okay. All right.
So they keep me on edge, both the Red Sox and the triplets.
Fair enough. OK, Okay. Well, I think with that, we can dig into our topic at hand today, which is the proof of concept deal and avoiding the bear trap and ensuring the honeypot is our goal. So to kick it off, maybe, Ken, you could just give us your perspective, from the Giga perspective or your prior roles. What is a proof of concept? Why is it, very important for any software founder to consider off the bat?
I don't come from Missouri, the show me state, but I think the problem that we have that exists today, and it's grown over the last 15 years, at least in particular that I've seen it, and specifically in sales, especially with disruptor technologies, is they need to see value, right? Mm-hmm. It depends on the maturity of the company, but as the company matures, what you end up seeing is less proof of concepts, because then you can do more reference selling and other capabilities. But when you're just starting out, people will not only want to see or hear about your idea because they want to know about what's going to be the next thing coming out from a job security perspective, mm-hmm. For possible clients, but they really want to see it, right?
Right.
And the value, I think, and this was especially important when we were at VeriSign and even some of the early SaaS adopters that I was with, like 10 years ago, even like Veracode, is with SaaS, you have this uncanny ability to usually get something up rather quickly, right?
Right.
So you want to be able to show that. And so actually moving to the SaaS world, it's kind of a double-edged sword. So one thing that's really, really good is to say, hey, this is what happens when you don't have to do this, right? We'll do it. We'll get it up and running for you. And you can worry about what your business is and let us handle this piece. So that's a tremendously important value point for any SaaS company. And so you want to make sure you have that. So having a good POC so that you can get it up and running, show them how to get it up and running, is going to quickly elevate you above anything that's in-prem or that they might build.
Sure.
And then two, just show time to market as well. All the things that basically you're trying to do as a disruptor in a SaaS platform.
Yep. And just so we get our terms straight, I guess how would you compare proof of concept to, a normal SaaS trial period or the like?
I think they're the same. I would use them as the same. I wouldn't define them differently. The hard problem is usually when you're combining with a hardware vendor or some other solution or a software vendor that's going to be perpetual license.
Yep.
You've got to give a lag time for installation, getting everything up and running and
right.
all that. So with SaaS, I think, like I said, this is where it becomes actually more important for you to really make sure you have a good process in place. Because with SaaS, 9 times out of 10, the worry here is it takes such a quick turn to create an instance or, whatever you might be selling.
Yep.
And that's why you really, really need to make sure that you have good process in there, or then you have 20 million POCs because it is so easy. Your sales teams know it's so easy to get up and running and everything else, and it can go the opposite side of the spectrum really quickly.
Yep. Yeah, I think about a lot of low-price SaaS solutions that may have a 14-day trial, and I kind of segment that out. But I think about proof of concept as, you don't necessarily need to be $1 million ACV, but you have a reasonably sizable time period where somebody's going to be testing the product and you're going to be expected to, like you said, show your ability to move quick and deliver value.
And it's all about accountability, right?
Right.
One of the things we were talking about, briefly before we came in, that I think is kind of critical is sometimes, in our eagerness to get to market, in our eagerness to get clients in, we forget that we're bringing value. Right.
Right.
And with that value, there has to be where it's a mutual value back and forth. Right. There's an old sales approach called Sandler that I think combats this very, very well. And we had this at Box where we had low ACVs, like 50 to 25K, just to kind of seed and feed the funnel and get them going.
Yep.
But even on those, you got to have good process, or again, they become unruly. And then, on the back end, when you get a sizable sales force, it becomes cost prohibitive for the organization, right? So
sure.
Those are the things you just got to be worried about a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, in our title, everyone probably saw our title is refers to the bear trap or the honeypot. You don't want to fall into the bear trap. You want to create the honeypot. I think everyone gets it. But, maybe we could just, before we actually head into the solution, Ken, you could just give us a little bit more color on, what the upsides are, why a POC can be so great, and the key things you really want to avoid that make up the bear trap.
Sure. So I actually look at POCs, and there's a difference of opinion sometimes, and I think it's definitely as companies mature where they debate how much longer they want to keep POCs in place. But in the beginning stage, whether you're a new company or coming out with a new product line, POCs are invaluable, right? If they're run right. And what I mean by that is, one, is it's going to take everything that you thought you were going to be able to validate that you thought the market wanted, now actually with market presence, right? So there's always going to be a multitude of people. If you ever look at the Geoffrey Moore crossing the chasm, there's going to be those really high risk takers in the organizations out there who are going to look at young startups that are coming out with new technology, right? And those are the ones where they're going to give you validation of like, hey, this would work at J&J or this would work at Pfizer. Or by the way, the vice versa. I was at Veracode where we realized, wow, we had to pivot because the area we were going in didn't really work. And then when we had Goldman Sachs and a few other financial companies come in and they're like, but if you did this, this would actually be more value for us.
Sure.
And so the, I think proof of concepts in general, they give you an incredible chance to validate your technology, your marketing, and they also give you a chance to see firsthand sales process, right? So when I'm talking to sales process, I'm not so much concerned about the negotiation point and the contract piece, but that very, very beginning piece, right? Where we're trying to establish value, we're trying to find out if they have budget or can they figure a way to get budgets for us. All that stuff is going to be kind of uncovered and verified and validated in the POC process if we create the proper milestones.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's dive into the structure then.
Sure.
You know, maybe we can just think about it from the perspective of, you know, you're an early founder, you're going into POC and you're starting to think about, you know, how to structure it. You know, we got to think about, first of all, who's going to be in it.
So I always think of, ideally, right, most times it's going to be friends and family, right? It's going to be people who know you, people who are very excited about the technology. You know, you might have gone to a couple startup, you know, where people were, you know, talking about other companies and then you interconnected some way. So there's always going to be those group of people. But you also need to think about the audience of where you're going after. You need to find some of those trendsetters, right? So, for instance, I always look at Goldman Sachs as an amazing trendsetter if you want to get into financial services. They're risk takers, right? And they've got an incredible program there. And if you get Goldman Sachs in a POC, it will legitimize you, not only in the eyes of the other banking community, their financial services, but it can also, like I said, they'll give you a ton of data back about what's valid and invalid about your solution. So I think besides looking at your friends and family, look at the key market, look at for those innovators in the marketplaces you want to go to, and then try to see if you can bring one of those in. Now, remember, bigger company that you have, you've also got to be slightly more protective of your IP because they have development staff, right? So you have to make sure that you're still establishing an NDA, right? That you're not giving away everything that's going there just to get that information back. That's really, really critical in the beginning. And this starts to set up, as I was talking about before, a very good process, right? So you want to have a set of milestones. And the first one's going to be looking at contracts, making sure that everyone understands, you know, what's going to be done over the course of the next, you know, possibly 30, 60, 90 days max, right?
Yeah.
And setting that up so that you can move forward.
So when you start thinking about milestones, you also have to think about, you know, time. And at the end of that period, theoretically, something happens. Hopefully they convert to a customer. Maybe it's the case that it's too early and you have to come back to them. How do you think about all those options?
You can't be afraid to rip off the Band-Aid, right? So, and I find that happens, especially when people get a lot of POCs in the beginning, is they get excited that they're getting all this attention, feedback, right? You got to set up, I think, depending on your solution and how hard it is to pull in the data or whatever you might be selling, is going to depend on how long the solution may take, right? In general, I always shoot for 30 days, right? And by the way, if someone hasn't bought anything in 90 days, then you got to cut it off. Right? Because then you're going to go to the other side of POC land, that bear trap, which is you're going to be sending more resources for people who aren't ready to buy, and it's time to pull it back.
That makes sense. Yeah, no, it makes sense. I guess I'm just thinking, so let's say you take 30 days as the target. How do you, you know, and you structure the milestones hopefully along the lines of, you know, what the core value you're providing is. Do you ask them to commit to anything in the interim?
So something we did really, really effectively at VeriSign, at Box, at Symantec, in particular, Vontu was like amazing at it at Symantec, was we had very, very good milestones that we established before we did anything, right? So we said, listen, We're the system experts. You're bringing us in here to understand how we're going to make your company better. And so we've noticed that if we do these 5, 6, 7 steps and we go boom, 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 that you're going to get the most amount of value for it, right? The key of that, I always try to tell people, is make sure that those milestones, there's technical milestones that are set up and that they're clearly explained before you do it. It's a classic old solution selling, right? Which is like, then once we have this kind of like milestone set up, we send it back and we say, hey, listen, did we miss anything that you wanted to give back to us, right? Always making it go back and forth to make sure that they're invested, right? Because the question is you want to tell people, say, listen, I'm going to be investing time and resources on this project. I need you to have that same type of investment and commitment, or it's not worth it, right? Peel off the Band-Aid, move forward, do another deal, go somewhere else.
Sure.
And I think that's where things get lost, is sometimes we start off with a POC process. No one ever sends it back to the customer to sign. Really, like, and you're saying, hey, I'm not looking for money, but I'm just looking for you to sign off that these are the items. And then I always say, I go, listen, I'm also looking for, if there's something here that you want that we can't do, I want to be upfront with you and tell you we can't do it, so there's not false expectations on the back end. So depending on your product, you'll figure these 4 or 5 milestones that people agree to. And then you'll have calls just to make sure, right, if you have a good salesperson that's backing up this kind of project management or SOW, right?
Yep.
And then the key thing at the end of the POC is commitment to getting higher, which is what we would usually in sales say, authority, right? So who's going to sign, right? And so at the end of this, I'm not looking for a signature, which I am, but saying before that, a POC has to end with the last thing, which is we're going to have a meeting with your executives and my executives, and we're going to show them the results, and we're going to go over this whole entire process, how we looked at all the things you wanted to try to achieve, and then at the end, we're going to have that meeting with your executives, they're going to sign off, and then hopefully we're going to move into the negotiation component. And so if you have that in there, people go, yeah, it makes sense, right? Yep. It's the natural flow of a sales process, and you're not pushing people, but you're kind of just trying to keep them in the right swim lane, if you might say.
Sure. So you mentioned negotiation process post-POC, but when do you start talking about numbers? Because, you know, you obviously want to avoid getting to the end of that and then being like, oh, well, there's no way I'm paying that. Right?
Yeah, everybody always asks that, right? So I think in the beginning, you know, you got to remember, until you show value,
right,
it's hard for you to ask for a lot of money, right? So I always tell people, I say, I give them a big range, right? I give them, hey, if you did a really big deal, here's a small range of what we would be, and then here's like the average selling price that we're normally around, right? So as long as they have that range, and then you can start to read their feedback or where their funding might be on this.
Mm-hmm.
Or like I said, if they're on the opposite end where this is a total, hey, we have budget for new projects and we don't know yet, which is a little more scary. But then, like I said, then there's just more questions we have to ask about the process and more people we have to ask to go see, right? Like, well, who would be funding this and how can we meet with them? Who are the business users that we should meet with, right, and bring into the process?
Sure.
Those kind of questions would start to push into a POC process.
And how malleable, let's say you're fairly early, you know, post a couple months post seed financing, you're just bringing together these first POCs. How malleable should you be based on the customer and their needs versus really sticking to your process?
It's a good question. You know, the funny thing is, I've been with companies that, you know, it's the first person in, right? And I've been with companies where we're 5 to 6,000 and we're global, right? Like a Symantec or a CA or some, or even a VeriSign, or I should say almost soon Box, right? Because they've almost got 2,000 salespeople. You know, when you start to look at it, it's at the end of the day, it's the same process. It doesn't change, right? The flexibility, right? Because the problem is that a lot of people lose sight that there's value here. Right.
Right.
Is that I'm asking you to pay for something and I'm bringing value and I'm going to do something for you. And this is what I'm going to do on the back end. Even if the worst case scenario, which is you're doing it just for PR, just to verify that market case.
Right.
Then you write in there, say, I've got to do this and I need to get from your marketing team that you're going to do press for us afterwards. There has to be this transaction for services. If there's not, then you're going down a bad road where you're going to be manipulated all the way until you sign. And then people are going to be like, well, why should I give you money?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess the thinking is, say you have a extremely large, you know, a potential account that seems interested. And, you know, you might be a little bit earlier than most of the products they'd be considering in this space. Do you step back and say, well, maybe this isn't the right time to bring these guys on as a POC because we need to wait until we can apply our normal structure? Or do you bend for them? Because the worry is do you avoid doing a POC too early because you don't want to, quote unquote, taint that prospect?
Well, so this is where we talked about before about who do you let in those first rounds,
right?
The alphas of the POCs, you might say, right?
Right.
So if you can find people in the very beginning that are a little bit more fan friendly, you might say,
sure,
then those are the people to bring on, because then you can kind of figure out the kinks of the POC process. When you go to your bigger accounts, it's almost like impression, right? You want to come off as a bigger company.
Yep.
And so the more nailed down and tight this process is, the more comfortable they're going to feel about working with you, and that basically they're going to start mitigating the risk of doing business with you than a global entity. So so if you can, like I said in the beginning, with the friends and family and some of these other people, work out the kinks,
yep,
hopefully you'll be ready for prime time by the time that happens.
So let's get really, really tactical and on the ground here for a second. What are, you know, if you join a new company tomorrow, you start a new company tomorrow, and you are going to start a POC next week, what items would you get in line? Like literally documents to come to them with.
So the first one's going to be an NDA.
Yep.
Right? Got to get an NDA both signed, because we just want to make sure we're protecting each other's IPs and sharing of information. The second thing I'm going to, if I'm in a very new stage, I'm probably not going to be determining whether they have funding or not have funding for the project, or I'm going to ask either way because I'm a salesperson.
Right.
But those are the first two, right? Is protect your assets, find out if there's funding or not funding, or what we're going to end up getting out of this. And then the second one is then, you know, literally it would still be the same process, right? We'd set up paperwork that I have a POC paperwork process, right? It's all digital.
Yep.
You can have a box or Dropbox or anybody you want to have. And you get that all set up, so it's a checkoff list, right? Mm-hmm. And then normally what you do is you work with your engineering team to find out, okay, what are the best value points that we're bringing to the marketplace, right? So yep, those are going to be in, by the way, that checkoff list of things that we want to do.
Right.
And then you're probably going to have a host of, you know, 20 other things that are open-ended that the client can provide feedback on. So you're going to provide a document like that you're going to be able to go back and forth with the client on. First the NDA, second set up an electronic copy of this kind of document that I can go back and forth on.
Right.
And then two, establish who's going to take on certain roles, right? So even as a founder, you kind of want to start to separate yourselves a little bit, where someone's going to be handling a slightly more of a business track, and where another person is going to be handling the day-to-day POC from a technical aspect. And it's good to kind of separate those entities when you can, because usually by the second or third milestone, it's going to be very technical about what was installed, what's not installed, did feeds get in, did they not get in, whatever it might be.
Yep.
And if you can, let's just say you're the founder and you're the not CTO,
right?
Take that higher path of then saying, okay, hey, that sounds like things are going well, and still kind of moving the ball along from a business perspective, like who would be interested from other people outside of IT, and you can keep working that other angle. Well, that technical person moves the needle all the way into the end. And then the nice thing is you both come back at the very end stage, right, where
yep,
all the checks have been marked off. You're basically kind of like your statement of work has been accomplished, right, your project
sure,
management. And then you meet back at the end for that final meeting with the executives. And because you've had someone working on the technical piece, I also find technical people, especially within IT, will give up more information
right,
with
right,
a technical person in the room. And then if you keep the business person out of the room, and when they come back, there can be a very good discussion then about price point setting and everything else, because there'll be more free discussion and more information.
Sure, by separating those two.
So tactically, an NDA, and then the second thing is having those clear milestones set up in your POC.
Yep.
And then, you know, on the back end, when you start to get a little bit better, you're going to want to put this into a process, right? Like you put it in the Salesforce or a CRM process.
Sure.
So then you're starting to track, a good tracking for early sales for me. I remember when we were even at VeriSign introducing our first SaaS product, was how many POCs do we have going on? Because we could quickly look at that metric and we knew what our close percentage was for POCs, which was extremely high.
Yep.
So then you can start putting it into other systems and then kind of rope it off from there.
Got it. Yeah, when you're a bigger company, you might have a account manager, sales engineer. For big deals, the management may be involved. There's a lot of roles. How do you think about who's leading this thing throughout, while still involving the
technical
resources?
Question, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So this is, again, so if you have this diagram we talked about, which sets up priorities, right? So it says, here are the objectives, here are the people involved, here's what we're asking of everybody, right? Here are the tasks. It's very, like I said, like a project management component, that POC document with the milestones. The great thing is what I've done in the past, and it's worked really, really well, is then you set up basically a flow diagram, and it goes right on top of that. Like, okay, for this meeting and this meeting, salesperson involved and technical person for the second meeting. And then it's like, okay, then it splits off. Where should this person be? Where should this person? And how do we loop around back to that final review right before we go to the executives for the final presentation?
Got it.
So it's really just creating, and this is what I meant by gold. You are literally creating your sales playbook, right? Because your POC is going to be probably pivotal in your sales. So you're literally now starting to create this very, very repeatable process so that we talked about this a little bit before, which makes it great, is that if you can define your POC process and you get it defined and it gets validated a couple times, then the nice thing is then as you bring on salespeople, you don't say, oh, hey, we sell this way. You go, no, here's the sales playbook. We've already said it's worked 10 times. Just keep using this. You can tweak it, but at least this is going to give you a good guidance of how to go from point A to point B. You're not figuring it out on your own. Right. And that should drastically cut down your sales cycles.
Yep. And do you think, you know, as you get more customer wins and you start getting to the point where, you know, you have referenceable clients, people know you, maybe you have a little bit of inbound, in some cases you may be able to skip the more full POC process and move start talking about numbers earlier. How do you measure that?
So, you know, it's kind of funny. So I would say, you know, I look at Vontu, right, who got eventually bought up by Symantec. I mean, they had, like I said, one of the best POC playbooks engines I've ever seen, right? I mean, it was just flawless. 90% of the POCs that they got into, they closed. I mean, it was just unbelievable, right? And so but your question was, like, when would you start to not do it? It depends on the product you sell. So in security, you rely a lot on FUD. And scaring the client. So sometimes you need to do POCs just to scare them into buying your solution and showing them their weaknesses. With other solutions that are more on the marketing or business perspective, then you could do more reference selling. So I would say sometimes in security, that may be a longer haul because you want to use the fear factor to push the sale.
Sure.
I would say for like Giga and Box and all the others, we're now at a point, or Giga is at a point, they've got 700 customers, right, that are up live. We can reference L'Oreal and some of these other customers, and we can just have people call. So once that starts to happen, you can literally probably cut your POCs down by half or down to nothing, right?
Right.
Though I would say, you know, knowing people still at Oracle and HP and everything else, do they still do POCs occasionally? Yes, but they're fewer and far between. But that's the other good thing about POCs. If you went and you really partnered with someone and you showed them you had this really good process, and that at the end of the POC, they got up and running really live, then you're going to have a good reference, which, again, is going to hopefully drive down your POC cost and time frames.
If you have a POC that, you know, you get to the end of the time frame and for whatever reason, it's not a fit, it doesn't move into contract, I guess what do you do at that point? I mean, do you say, you know, maybe it's not the right time, we'll follow up later? I mean, this is assuming you didn't bomb some part of the, you know, of the process.
It happens, right?
Yeah.
No, technical mistakes happen.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, this is, again, that if you do a really good job in the beginning part of getting all of their parameters of how they want the POC to go from the customer's perspective, and you match them with yours, and again, that's why it's really critical in that first piece to get them to actually physically sign or at least say they signed it and they're okay, they get an email back, because then they're committed, right? And then you can kind of figure everything out and go from there. I mean, the biggest things that happen with POCs is scope creep, actually, where what you originally committed to, halfway down the line, they go, oh, but if we could do this and this and this, oh my God, this would be fantastic, right? And that's where POCs go bad. And that's usually where you've gone beyond your capabilities in hunting for the bigger deal that could attack possibly more divisions of a company or whatever it might be.
Right.
And then tactically, you know what? It's really, really hard to back away from POCs, especially when you're coming right out of the gate because you just want clients. But at the end of the day, you got to, right? Because it's either that or you're just setting yourself up for failure. So I think that's when you... you know, again, if you've had this good process and you've had a good communication pattern, you say, listen, we're just not going in the right path. It doesn't look like it's going to provide value for you. So at least with where you want to go or your specific business use case, we still think we do a lot of value over here. But, you know, if you don't, rip off the Band-Aid and just move on, say, hey, let's part as friends.
You mentioned Sandler earlier. You want to just expand on that a little bit?
So there's a couple different... I think there's like 20 books out there for sales, right?
Yeah.
The old school one I bring out in particular is Sandler, because Sandler has a really good process, which is, and this happens a lot specifically in new companies, and in old, but mostly a lot in new, is that there's such an eagerness to go and get the business, right? That you're like a dog running, right? To go get the ball. And so the client throws the ball and you run everywhere, and you go, I'll go get it, I'll go get it, I'll go get it, I'll go get it. And you never really stop and be like, why am I getting this ball? And you never, so the Sandler approach, one of the key things about it is that I particularly like and put in the POC process is there has to be like, hey, we're going to do this, but there's got to be there's value we're bringing to the table, or I'm not just going to keep running the ball. It's you're starting a give-get relationship, which is critical when you want to finally negotiate a deal, is that you have to establish a relationship that's give and get, right? And so Sandler, that's their big thing, is like, hey, I'm not going to waste your time. And that's why I tell people about the POC, is like, put in what you want there for the POC, because if we can't do it, I'm not even going to do this POC. I'm not going to waste your time.
Right.
You get a huge amount of respect from walking away saying you can't do something, then going into it, and then it going 10 months and you're still on a POC, and then you just look foolish, right? So Sandler has this approach of, if you guys haven't seen it, you can go out there, get sales training anywhere, or pick up the book. And it's really about making sure that you're not running after the ball every time the client throws it, that you're actually saying, hey, I'm more than willing to do this as long as I get this in return. So it's establishing a good give-get relationship.
All about that mutual commitment.
Yep.
So just to kind of round this out, maybe you could give us an example, you know, over the various companies you've been at, of one success, you know, basically the honeypot, and one bear trap, maybe the key differences.
I'll tell you, I even one as an individual contributor a long time ago. We were coming at it with a new product at a startup, and we had just bought this company, and they came in. We had no idea how to sell it, but there was we had a company, a very, very large, let's say, global financial company that wanted to use it.
Right.
Or thought they wanted to use it because it sounded kind of cool. And we literally went into that POC, same process. We created all these milestones, but then they asked us for technical documentation on the product, which we had not created at all, right? So I literally remember spending a whole 24 hours up all night creating technical documentation with the team back and forth from California, just so that we could present it for the final presentation that was like in 2 days. But what saved us, again, was a very good mutual respect about the value we were both bringing to the table. And, you know, ultimately, the nice thing was, because of that mutual respect that we had, they gave us a little more leeway with a brand new product than probably most organizations, you know, would have.
Sure.
Where I saw it go wrong in the beginning was before I got to Box, right? Because Box, again, it's very easy to set up a free instance.
Right.
We gave away a lot of free product, right? Because we thought that you would use with a free instance and then eventually buy the bigger piece for enterprise.
Yep.
And then we found out we had 50 to 100 of them, right? They were just all over the place. And there was no rhyme or reason why some people were looking at it. And especially when Box made a pivot to go after the enterprise content management space, which was a lot more integrating into our API platform. We didn't have any definition around that, right? So we were stuck in these elongated projects that went for 3 to 6 months with no return. And so because people thought it was free, there was also no commitment on their side to ever negotiate. There was never a give-get relationship that was ever established.
Yep.
So it was very troublesome. So we turned it around, and that's when we started seeing the ASP price go high. And that's actually when we decided also, you know, as Doug will tell you, that's when we started to go mad with hiring people in the field, because we saw the ASP get above 100K. Now we saw the sales cycle shorten, right? The POC became much more of a good driver. And also a good indicator of how many deals are really in the pipe.
Great.
That's the danger of free product.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was thinking the documentation, outside of just, you know, making sure your own ducks are in a row, it almost has the effect of reminding them that it's a commitment on the other side, right? This is not just going to be an indefinite, hey, why don't you try it. Fiddle around with this for six months.
Which happens, right? And especially when it's free. To be like, I'll try your free version and I'll get back to you. Well, then, so when that happens, I've lost my marketing. Is my marketing working or not working, right? I've lost any validation I could have gotten in further from that product about are we in the right verticals or anything else. We've just lost all of that, right? So, and again, it's getting that mutual. It's really about getting mutual commitment is a very, very big thing. And having people understand that it's a good, it's supposed to be a give-get relationship.
Great. Well, I think we're running up on time here, but just to ask one final question, which I always like to ask. If you were to put yourself in the shoes of an early stage founder, you know, or sales lead, and you know, you're thinking about your first POC, what's kind of a final one or so key thoughts take away here?
It's all around this, which is sales is not really an art. It's a process, right? And so a lot of people who have never sold before think it's this great art. You've got to hire these people and they've got magic in their fingers. It's really about setting up good process. So if you can set good process in the beginning, this will make your life easier for rolling out your product, hiring salespeople, hiring sales management, and everything else. So don't be afraid of putting in good process right in the beginning so that you're structured throughout and can grow how you need to grow and scale.
Excellent. Well,
that was multi, wasn't it? It was like all over the place, but
that was I think perfect. I think a perfect cap. You know, as I was saying, in more than one podcast, we've had structure come up again and again, and you know, especially for early stage founders, I think it's an important thing to remember.
Yeah. So, well, thanks for having me. This has been fantastic. Hopefully, it's helpful.
I thought it was great. Hopefully, our listeners do too. Thanks again, Ken, and to the listeners, we will catch you again next week. We'll be right back.